fractal of consciousness currently expressing as a human being in the most authentic way that we can imagine. Always remember to take what resonates and leave the rest. Welcome to Mental Magic.
All right, as soon as I hit that record button, I immediately get nervous, which is probably why I have been MIA for the last, 6, 7 months. But no matter. Welcome, everyone. Welcome back to Mental Magic Season 3. You will notice that if you've listened to Season 1 or Season 2 of this podcast, I probably sound a little different. That's intentional. I have been on, I'm going to call it a journey of liberation, a journey of internal freedom, of realizing some things about myself that I had an inkling about. I just didn't allow myself to do the deep dive into neurodiversity. A few years ago when I first heard the word neurodiverse, and in the last, probably in the last year or so, like so many people that I've seen on the interwebs, I'm on TikTok, I'm on Instagram, social media. All of these people are coming onto my For You page talking about, oh, I have late diagnosed autism, ADHD, neurospiciness, which is my absolute favorite word for neurodiversity. I resonated with a lot of what I was hearing. I would hear the characteristics, the symptoms, the signals that you have autism or you have ADHD. And I'm like, yeah, this stuff is starting to sound familiar. I have some of those same struggles. I think some of those same things, but I can't possibly be autistic. I can't possibly have ADHD. I know people who are autistic. I have friends who have ADHD, and I'm not like them. Like, I don't express the way that they express. And so I put it off for a while because I was afraid. I was afraid to find out even more information about myself that I feared would change who I am, change how I identified myself, change how I even operated with other people and how I saw myself in the world, the role that I was playing as this human being that I have so specifically and particularly curated. I was afraid to disrupt my self-identity. But within the last 6 months, I finally bit the bullet. I bought some books, read some articles by some, credible published medical people, psychologists, neurologists, on and on. And I allowed myself to come to the realization that I already knew was true, but to accept it from a more informed vantage point. I came to the realization that I would say it's 99% true. There's a 99% chance that your girl here is ADHD. What that essentially means is someone who has autism and ADHD. Anyone who's done any kind of research into neurospiciness will know that there is a high comorbidity rate between the different mental divergences. Comorbidity essentially just means that if you have one neurospicy diagnosis, it's likely that you have others. Other neurodivergent diagnoses can be anything from generalized anxiety, depressive disorders, OCD, schizophrenia, anything that has to do with the wiring of your brain. And if your brain is wired in a way or has developed in a way that is different from the quote unquote neurotypical person, you, my friend, are neurodivergent. And in my world, you're neurospicy, because I don't see it as a disability in the classical sense of the word for me specifically. Now, my ADHD, and I'm going to just say the word neurospicy going forward because I don't have a formal diagnosis. I have no desire of getting a formal diagnosis because the barriers in order to get that diagnosis for me as a female marginalized human, from what I've read, it seems like it would be more of a headache than a help at this point. And the only reason that I could even think that I would want to get that official diagnosis is to have that official piece of paper from some licensed person telling me, you have this thing that you already know you have. Congratulations. So I'm going to skip all of that. I am going to speak from my experience of someone who has a neurospicy brain, who has been masking her whole fucking life. Well, maybe not my whole life. I'm sure when I was a small child, I didn't mask because I didn't have any idea of how else to express other than who I was naturally. And then the lovely world that I was living in decided that I was expressing in the wrong way. So we need to correct her behavior. We need to tell her who she needs to be, how she needs to show up so that she is easy for all of us to handle and manage. Thank you, world. But regardless of how I have developed as a human being, how my brain has developed as a human being, who I have become and the identity that I have built over the last now 35 years of my life, I, in this process of realizing that I am neurospicy, that my brain has literally developed in ways that are different from neurotypical people, that has made it more challenging, that has made it incredibly frustrating, and altogether it has made it so that I have felt so alone for most of my life because I felt like a weirdo. I felt like an oddball. I felt like I never could quite belong or fit in anywhere that I went because I knew, I had this inkling when I was 8 years old, I knew that I was hiding. I knew that I was hiding inside of myself, and I knew that who I was expressing as wasn't the true, authentic, real me. I knew I was playing a character. I used to, as I've been doing all of this research and really understanding what it means to mask and why people mask and what it means to have different neurodivergent characteristics, and I'll get back to why I didn't and why I don't identify as a disability for me in a second. In this space, on this podcast going forward, I will go on tangents and I will do my best to circle back to topics I bring up and sentences that I trail off from. But this is part of my, you know, unmasking journey, if you want to call it that, to where I'm allowing myself to speak the way that I speak, the way that my brain operates. This is the chaos. This is the madness that is always going on in my mind at all times. And so back to my story, when I was about 8 years old, I don't know specifically how old I was. All I have in my memory banks is this image of this little girl looking into her mirror that's above her dresser, and she made a promise to herself. That little girl in the mirror promised herself that one day I will get to come out as who I am. I'll get to express myself as who I am and not have to hide anymore because the world will be ready for me. The world will be ready to see me as I am without telling me that I'm bad, that I'm wrong, that I'm crazy, that I'm an idiot, that I'm naive, that I am a problem. And so today, my friends, today is the day, is the wish fulfillment day for that little 8-year-old version of me. I can see her staring in the mirror, and I'm looking back at her saying, we're doing it. We're coming out of the closet that I didn't even know I was in. I didn't know at 8 years old what neurodiversity was, what autism or ADHD or any of these neurological differences are. I had no idea. All I knew back then was that I was hiding who I was and that I didn't like that I was hiding who I was, but I did it because it kept me safe. It made people think that I belonged, that I fit in. It made people, as I grew up, and became an adult, everyone always assumed that I had my shit together. They assumed that I was a functional, responsible, organized, and intelligent human being. And I am intelligent. I'll give them that. I'm intelligent as shit. But it's because studying is my fucking special interest. Like, I fucking love to study. Like, I am someone who is extremely fascinated in digging into, you know, the specifics of whatever I'm interested in, and then doing deep dives. And so school was easy as shit for me because I fucking love to receive information and then spit it back out at you. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's why when I was a kid, I wanted to be a teacher because I was like, I could do this. I'm doing it. I would do it to my dolls. In order to study, I would take whatever homework I had and then I would teach my homework assignment to my dolls that were lined up in front of a little mini whiteboard that I had as a child. So I loved receiving information and then regurgitating it back out. And I feel like I'm on another tangent. See, this is what's going to happen. But if this is your jam, if this is your shit, come on board. If not, I totally understand if this is too unhinged or too hard to follow. Trust me, I get it. I've had, 35 years of having to filter through the way my brain operates and try and make sense of the chaos that is going on inside of my mind. So going back to why I don't consider being neurospicy as a disability for me specifically, because I want to make it very abundantly clear that I do understand that there are people who are autistic, who have different neurodivergences, ADHD, OCD, schizophrenia, all of these different neurological differences, that their differences do inhibit their expression of who they are, and it does have a significant impact on their lives. They need the additional accommodations. They aren't able to mask in the way that some of us are able to mask. They're not able to function in a neurotypical society. They're not able to present as high functioning. And so I do understand that it is helpful to have the label of a disorder or a disability in order to bring awareness to the neurotypical individuals that this person needs additional help. They need additional accommodations. And now while I, as a neurospicy person, probably do need some accommodations and some additional help from my neurotypical brothers and sisters, but I have spent, the last 35 years not asking for those accommodations, not asking for that additional help, because I really didn't know that I was someone who could ask for those things. But even now that I'm in a space where I've had this realization about myself, I'm still trying to figure out what would be the most helpful things that I could ask for from my family, from my friends, from my coworkers, and from people that I want to get to know in the future. I'm not really sure what that help would look like for me, other than people around me understanding that my brain is just a little bit different. And so if I seem a little weird, if I seem a little off or standoffish or introverted or whatever, when you're engaging with me, if you feel like I'm faking it or I'm putting on a show or I'm performing, it's likely that you're engaging with my mask, and I am putting on a little show for you. But it's out of my desire to stay safe. I will say that I have spent so many years perfecting a mask that kept me safe in this world, because the world that I was born in, the world that I was raised in, it wasn't okay for me to be like, hey, I'm a little different, without people then assuming that I was not intelligent, or people assuming that I needed to be put in special classes because I wouldn't be able to keep up. But the ironic thing I will say, because one of my special interests is studying, and so I was really good at school, and because I was so good at school, I was also still separated from the general population in my public education system. I was put in what's called the GATE program in elementary school, and then in junior high, I was in honors classes, and then once I got into high school, I was in the International Baccalaureate program, which was extremely difficult, but also extremely rewarding for me because it made college extremely easy. And I was a straight A student, graduated with above a 4.0 GPA, on and on. So I have proven, and this is another one of the things that my masking has helped me, that realizing that I am masking, I have been able to identify so many of the insecurities that I have been harboring inside of myself. For the longest time, I had been on this quest to prove to other people that I'm intelligent. And now, as I look back on my academic record and on my accomplishments in, you know, the corporate world and in the 3D job that I have, I, without a shadow of a doubt, believe now, because there's empirical proof and evidence that I'm intelligent. But because I have always been hiding inside of myself, it was always a concern for me that if I ever expressed in a different way, if I was ever truly honest and communicated in the way that I naturally think, or spoke out in the ways that my brain was naturally functioning or naturally delivering messages and information to me, that I would be perceived as less than intelligent. I would be perceived as someone who wasn't able to follow along, or I would be perceived as a nuisance, a problem, a weirdo. So this whole concept of masking for me, while some people will, you know, rightfully so, say that people who mask are being fake, or we are being manipulative, I agree. I agree that it can be very, very hard to get to know someone who does mask. But I would also urge you to understand that nobody masks for no reason. And in my experience, it was done to protect myself, because I did see children when I was coming up in school, and then adults later in life, who didn't mask or who didn't have the ability or capability to mask in the ways that I did. And I saw how they were treated. And the thing that I didn't realize until I started going on this journey of realizing and actually embracing my neurospiciness, something that I clocked when I was young and then also paid attention to once I became an adult, are people who were ostracized, bullied, made fun of. I paid special attention to what those people did that made them seem different or seem like a target for other people, because I was bullied for a bit growing up. But because I was studying, and one of my other special interests is studying human behavior and studying human consciousness, which is why that is mostly what I've been rambling on about for the last few years. But one thing I studied in my classmates and then in my coworkers and so on and so forth was anyone who was a little bit different. I tried to identify what made them different and what about their differences made it so that other people made fun of them. And then once I did that, I realized that a lot of the characteristics that people were being made fun of for, and the characteristics that people were being bullied for, were things that were also true of me, were ways that I knew that I naturally expressed. They asked questions that I had as well. They had, you know, tics and what I have now come to know as stimming, something that I would naturally do, but I would suppress so deeply to where by the time I got home from school, pretty much every day after school, I would go in my room and I would dance my hardest. I would dance my heart out for hours to just move energy through my body. And the way that I took care of myself as an adult, undiagnosed, not knowing that it was a need to stim that made me feel just like I had so much pent up energy in my system. After work, I would get into my car, blast my music as loud as I possibly could handle, and then sing at the top of my lungs in order to move this energy that I had been suppressing and repressing for 8 hours in a day. And so because I want this episode to not only me revealing my truth, coming out as neurospicy, because I needed another thing to come out as in this lifetime, but I also want it to be helpful for anyone who is also on this journey of realizing that they too may be a little neurologically different than the people around them. So I have my handy dandy book here that I absolutely adore. It's been one of the most helpful resources that I have dug into. It's called Unmasking Autism, The Power of Embracing Our Hidden Neurodiversity by Dr. Devin Price. They did an excellent job with this book. Now, I'm going to read through some of the common traits associated specifically with what's called quote-unquote female autism, because even though the word female autism is inaccurate and improper, simply because autism isn't something that is necessarily gendered. Autism is a, from what I've learned and understood in this last several months or so, autism is a spectrum. Everyone who is on the autistic spectrum expresses in a different way. Some of us have challenges with social skills, picking up social cues. Some have challenges with speech. Others have different ways that they stim. There could be challenges with emotional regulation. And I'm just literally going through the autism color wheel. You can see when you're looking at the wheel, and I'll go back and I'll read the list of all the things on the wheel. But when you're looking at it, the autism condition, I guess I'll call it, it can express in so many different ways based on the individual autistic person. And so it doesn't look the same on everyone, which is why when we classify autism as female autism, we are in a way minimizing the experience of the individual, whether they're female, non-binary, male. We are minimizing their experience and putting a gender label on something that doesn't need to be associated with gender. So really quickly, just to go through the different ways that autism can be expressed in an individual based on the autism color wheel. It includes, like I've already mentioned, speech, social skills, stimming, which is, you know, moving your hands, moving energy through your body, emotional regulation, sensory processing, motor skills and coordination, executive functions, anxiety, meltdowns, need for routine, depression, and then nonverbal communication. And so for me, speech is not something that I necessarily struggle with when I feel comfortable. When I feel uncomfortable, when I feel unsafe, honey, I mute. I put myself on pause and I go non-communicado. I step into that non-verbal space because I am so scared of saying something wrong or saying something weird or being perceived in a way that is not in alignment with the mask that I had created and that I was presenting to the world as who I am. Look at me, world. This is Christina Marie Fennell. She's, you know, a quiet introvert, studious, good girl. And I played that character and I played it well, but I also played other characters in, you know, sometimes in the shadows, and sometimes just in my friend groups when I felt safe enough to express and reveal more of who I am. And so I've already mentioned on previous episodes that I'm someone who has been diagnosed with a generalized anxiety disorder, as well as depression, and I have struggled for a long time with my ability to socialize with other people. I didn't realize it was because I had a hard time interpreting people's social cues, and I had a hard time interpreting what people were actually saying. Like, it wasn't really even until the last month where I realized that when I'm listening to anyone else talk to me, I interpret everything that everyone says so incredibly literally. Like, anytime anyone says anything to me, the first way that I am going to interpret what you're saying is I'm going to interpret it literally. And then I feel like I have manually built several different filters inside of my mind and my brain consciousness, whatever, that I then run whatever the person said that I interpreted literally. I run it through all of these filters and I'm like, is there any potential that they could be joking? What is my history of knowing that this person jokes? Would they joke about this thing? Are they being serious? Are they saying this in jest? Is this sarcasm? And then based on my analysis, and all of this happens very quickly in my subconscious, but based on my analysis, I then to make a determination, okay, I think this person is joking, or I think this person is being serious. And it has happened more times than I can count to where I miscalculate and then I respond to the person as if they're telling me a joke and they were actually being serious. Or I respond to them earnestly with seriousness and I find out that they're just joking. And it has caused me so much grief. And so once I realized that, oh, that's an autism thing, I was like, there was so much liberation in that and so much understanding in that. And now I get to just communicate to my family and friends when I do misinterpret something. I just let them know immediately, like, hey, everything you're saying to me, I'm interpreting it literally. I have filters that I'm trying to like diagnose, or I'm trying to determine if what you're saying is in jest or if you're being serious. But sometimes I'm going to get it wrong. And so I'm going to need you to help me out a little bit with that. And my family and friends, it's an adjustment period, but we're doing great with it. It's all new information and we're doing the best we can with the new information that we're learning about not only me, but learning about each other. And so my other goal with the podcast, before I go into these traits of female autism, because I did not forget, sometimes I forget my, streams of consciousness threads. But another thing that I want to do with this podcast is not have my solo episodes so fucking long, because historically they've just been too long and I wouldn't even want to go back and re-listen to all of them, or I'd have to listen to them in pieces. So know that I am conscious of that now going forward. So to wrap up this unmasking, unhinged, coming out of the neurospicy closet episode, I'm just going to run through my evidence, run through my proof of why I identify so heavily with specifically the autism label that is connected to the ADHD or neurospicy label that is part of the lexicon of labels that I identify as my unique human expression and personhood. So this list is broken down into four general categories. I'm only going to read the ones that relate to me based on my experience, but you can find this list again in the book Unmasking Autism by Dr. Devin Price. So in the first category, emotional, strikes others as emotionally immature and sensitive. I worked my damnedest to mask this trait about myself. I did not want people to think that I was naive. I did not want people to think that I was immature. I did not want people to think that I was too sensitive. And so I hid those things and I made decisions and choices that put myself in compromising positions as well as others in compromising positions to prove to myself and to others that I wasn't immature, that I wasn't naive, and that I could handle life as life came to me, that I wasn't too sensitive. But I am sensitive, that is. I'm not emotionally immature any longer because I have gone on the journey and done so much work to increase my emotional maturity and to understand human emotions and to express them in a more mature and healthy way. But some other key autistic traits that I identify with is prone to outbursts or crying jags, sometimes for seemingly small things. I mean, as a child, I was like a water faucet. I cried at the drop of a dime. I cried a lot. But growing up in the 90s, and I know I've said it before, just the rhetoric that we were told, especially as an African-American woman, my family was very strict with me about not crying in public because you don't want people to see that you are weak, because if they see that you're weak, they're going to take advantage of you. Now, I used to say that I received this program and that it was a bad thing, but I'm now seeing it through a new lens where I recognize that this strong mask that my family helped me create allowed me, it was a protective shield for me, because people perceived me as intimidating. People perceived me as cold. People perceived me as standoffish and as someone who you don't really want to mess with because of the people I surrounded myself by and because of some of the outbursts and meltdowns I had in public. People perceived me in a way to where they didn't necessarily take advantage of me unless you got close to me. And if you got close to me, you saw that I was like an open book, and I would, like, you know, I've learned boundaries since then. But this is something that I, again, had to hide because it wasn't appropriate and it was also dangerous. And then similar to that vein, another one of these characteristics is ignores or suppresses emotions until they bubble up and explode. You know, that happened to me all the time as a child. It was very common in my family for all of us to just bottle up our feelings until we turn into fucking volcanoes and, you know, trauma and toxicity ensued. And then finally, in the emotional category, the characteristic that I most identify with is goes blank or seems to shut down after prolonged socializing or when overstimulated. Remember when I said I used to go mute in social situations where I felt like I didn't know how to engage? I also go mute when I'm overstimulated. I literally just like blank out. My it feels like my consciousness exits my body. I disassociate and I'm living in my fantasy world. I am living on another planet when my battery is out, when my energy sources are low. So then moving on to the psychological category of the autistic traits that I resonate with, reports a high degree of anxiety, especially social anxiety. That's a no-brainer for me. I was diagnosed with that. And the first time I went into therapy at 18, I put myself in therapy at 18 as soon as I entered college in order to help with my social anxiety specifically. Is perceived by others as moody and prone to bouts of depression. That, again, I was already diagnosed with depression. And fears rejection intensely and tries to manage how other people feel to avoid it. Honey, if I could tell you all of the ways that I learned to people please, to appease my elders, and to be the teacher's pet, and to just always be everyone's little helper, so that I could always have a space where I could belong. So even if my best friends were absent in school one day and I was all alone because I didn't really have any other friends that I could hang out with, especially like in elementary school, I just became best friends with the school librarian. So I would hang out in the library during lunch or recess or whatever. And then later in life, I just, you know, masking, I learned what other people liked. I learned how to mirror other people, and I did my best to act like everyone else so that I wouldn't get rejected. And then finally, in the psychological category has an unstable sense of self, perhaps highly dependent on the opinions of others. And again, that goes back to me just not wanting to be rejected. I, you know, I talked about in the first season how I went on this whole spiritual healing journey, awakening journey, to try to understand who I am at my core outside of the opinions of other people. And this speaks deeply to that, because I called myself a chameleon. I would brag about the fact that I could go into any social circle, figure out how to behave, and then just blend in. And I was very good at it until I realized what I was doing, and then I was horrified. But such is life. This is the journey. The next category is the behavioral category. So one of the characteristics is uses control to manage stress. Follows intense self-imposed rules despite having an otherwise unconventional personality. You'll see throughout the course of hopefully the rest of my life that I have a very unconventional personality that has been hidden under layers of masks. And some of those masks hold extraordinarily stringent and strict self-imposed rules. The rules, the policies and procedures that I am living under in my own mind and my own consciousness are very strict. I mean, to be fair, I was raised in a very strict environment growing up, but I also have a very strict set of rules that I am living under in order to manage my own stress, in order to make life easier for me, in order to control the environments that I find myself in, control other people, control myself. Everything needs to be managed so that I don't get in trouble, so that people don't see me as weird, so that I don't get rejected. Another characteristic is usually happiest at home or in a familiar, predictable environment. That couldn't be any more true of me. Like, I love my little safe space that I create in my homes and with the people who allow me to exist in a way that is as authentic to who I actually am as possible. And then some of the other behavioral characteristics that I highly masked. Now, these are the things that I saw that other people were picked on for these things. And so I suppressed them until I could get home, or I expressed them in really unhealthy ways. So there's seems youthful for their age and looks, dress, behavior, or interests. That was hidden. Prone to excessive exercise, calorie restriction, or other eating disorders. Did that as well. Neglects physical health until it becomes impossible to ignore. I mask that. And then also self-soothes by constantly fidgeting, listening to repetitive music, twirling hair, picking skin or cuticles. Yeah, I already talked about how my stimming, or one of the ways that I satisfied my need to stim. And it was with music and a lot of repetitive music as well. Okay, and then this last category is the social category. I've kind of already alluded to the fact that I have issues socializing. It gives me so much anxiety to have to communicate with other human beings, regardless of how long I've known you, if I don't feel safe enough to unmask or be my authentic self with you. And it's not necessarily any fault of anyone else's that I mask around them. It really just comes down to, at this point, 35 years of historical data of seeing different patterns of the negative ways that other humans respond to neurospicy behavior or to behavior that is not neurotypical. And so I am pretty skittish with human beings at this point, pretty scared of human beings at this point, because in my observations, humans can be really harsh, really abrasive, and downright cruel at times when they perceive someone who is different from them. So with this social category, you know, one of the top characteristic or the first characteristic here is a social chameleon, adopts the mannerisms and interests of the groups that they're in. I've already, you know, said I was a professional chameleon for many years of my life, which also points to people sometimes having the opinion, you know, rightly so, that I wasn't necessarily authentic, that I was fake, because, you know, I was. But in my defense, it was for good reason, at least in my brain, to keep me safe. So it's like, it's tough out here for neurospicy humans. another characteristic is maybe highly self-educated, but will have struggled with the social aspects of college or their career. I think I've already spoken to that as well. One of my special interests is studying. I will deep dive into any topic at the drop of a dime if it piques my interest, but socializing is tough. Can be very shy or mute, yet become very outspoken when discussing a subject they are passionate about. I've already said, I know how to hit the mute button, but also if you get me on a topic that is one of my special interests, honey, get me to shut up. I dare you. struggles to know when to speak in large groups or at parties. Accurate. Doesn't initiate conversations, but can appear outgoing and comfortable when approached. I could do this for like 5 minutes because I learned like the few things that you generally ask people about when you're doing the small talk thing, which I fucking hate. But because I am a professional and I was trained, I had corporate training, I learned how to initiate conversations, be super friendly and bubbly, ask surface level questions, and get the job done, you know, build that rapport. So, but it's not because it was easy. It's because I always saw it as part of my job. And then the last characteristic that I deeply identify with is has trouble disappointing or disagreeing with someone during a real-time conversation. I am so non-confrontational, especially in a real-time conversation. If there's something that goes wrong in a real-time conversation, you may get a text, a very long text from me later trying to explain myself or explain what happened or explain that I don't agree with you. But in real time, it feels like that looming rejection is just behind me disagreeing with anyone. And a lot of these things are things that I have been working on for decades at this point of working to be more comfortable in social settings, of learning how to be more direct and to say what I actually think and to share my contrasting opinions. I am actively in the process of learning how to mask less and to reveal my authentic self more in spaces where I feel safe enough to do so. But then I'm also embracing the ways that my body simply just needs to move energy through it. I simply have to stim. I have to exercise in healthy ways. I have to info dump about topics that I'm fascinated about. Hence why I created this fucking podcast, so that I can have a space where I can be myself authentically, unmasked as possible, and share what I want to share. Because like I said before, I love telling people about the stuff that I'm learning about. And instead of lining up my Barbies and stuffed animals in front of a little whiteboard and teaching them about everything that I learned in my school day, like I did when I was a child, that was my form of play as a child, was teaching schoolwork. But instead of teaching inanimate objects, I created a podcast, and I don't know that I'm going to teach you anything really. I hope that you do gain a few nuggets here or there that are helpful for you as you go forth in your life and in your experience on this planet. But I really do want to share with you, whoever you are, some of the things that I have been learning as it pertains to things that I am deeply fascinated by. And one of the things that I am most fascinated by on this planet is human beings. And so I will be talking a lot about everything that I have been learning about you, fellow human traveler on this earth planet that we are temporarily calling home, because you know, no one lives here forever.
All right. Well, that does it for me. Thank you so much for, you know, returning to this podcast, coming back and listening. And if this is, I don't know at what point you're listening to this, you could be in the future and you're just like, what is she talking about? This episode came right after season two. But for those who have been waiting for my season three premiere to drop, here it is. Thanks for being in my world. And it's going to be a different ride, maybe a little bit of a bumpy ride, but I think we're going to find some really cool things along the way and really fun versions of ourselves to engage with as we enjoy our mental freedom through mental magic. Love you. Bye. And if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Instagram at Mental Magic Podcast with a period after each word. And thank you as always for listening. Bye.